Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All manner of persons having anything to bring before the Honorable Justices of the Supreme Court of the State of Delaware will now draw near and give their attendance. The court is now open. God save the state and the honorable court.
Good morning. The court's ready to hear arguments. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Ronald Polishman of the law firm Young, Romberg, and Howard, on behalf of Lucian Sapansky in this appeal. Counsel would respectfully request 5 minutes of reserve time for rebuttal.
Request is granted now. The clock will come on yellow when you're into your 5 minutes, and you can continue speaking, but you'll be using up your reserve time.
Thank you, Justice Holland. Your Honor, this case is an appeal from the Superior Court, which granted a motion for summary judgment in favor of Ascendant Mortgage vacating the Superior Court confirmation and setting aside the tax munition sale. The issue before this court is whether the Superior Court abused its discretion in finding excusable neglect, extraordinary circumstances, or a mistake under Rule 60B to set aside the tax munition sale. We contend the lower court did for the following reasons. One, Ascendant Corporation had absolute and continued notice of the proceedings, and also notice on how to proceed to remedy any mistakes to the proper statutory redemption or a petition to set aside the sale. Yet, despite having this knowledge, Ascendant did not act in the proper legal fashion. Number two, the procedure for the tax munition sale is set by statute, and those requirements were fulfilled. Number three, public policy dictates that there be some finality for the tax munition sale to protect both good faith purchasers and innocent owners. The facts, for the most part, are undisputed. In the past, there was a discrepancy between the City of Dover tax parcel identifications and Kent County tax parcel identifications. And because of this discrepancy, the tax payments received by the city for the property at issue were not credited at the proper account in the years 1999 and 2000. It should be noted that Senate's predecessor, who previously handled tax payments for the property, knew that the City of Dover used different tax parcel numbers than Kent County. Essentially, when the tax payments were made in the years 1999 and 2000, they were made to the wrong account, which eventually led to the city sending a delinquent tax statement to the property owners on January 4th, 2001. January 18th, 2001, the city issued a munition tax warning notice, which properly identified the property. Subsequently, the city issued a tax sale notice, which identified the property incorrectly at first as parcel number 36, but which was manually crossed out to say number 35, properly complying with the statute. On March 27, 2001, the property was sold at a munition tax sale to the highest bidder, Mr. Sapansky, for the sum of $2,450.
And what's the value of this property?
Your Honor, the value of this
property,
I believe it's $160,000 ballpark.
Quite a bargain.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But the ball was always in Sendin's court in regarding to do something about remedying the situation.
Am I mistaken? Isn't it the fact that the taxes were not unpaid? It was just that they were not properly allocated to the right parcel number?
Your Honor, that situation was known to Senate Corporation before the sale even occurred, before the confirmation occurred. In fact, they had noted, and the reason why we have these procedural requirements during these sales is to protect innocent owners. This is Senate Corporation. It's one of the biggest corporations in the world. They have very good attorneys like counsel over there to look at these statutes. The rules of the game are set beforehand.
Okay. What I'm trying to get at is this. If I understand the facts correctly, because of a mistake in the nomenclature of the parcels or the identification numbers or whatever, although the taxes were in fact paid, they were not properly recorded as having been paid for these parcels, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So in terms of what the reality was, there was no tax liability that was unpaid that would lead to a sale, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Although, if I could explain, there is some dispute as whether Sending Corporation, their predecessor actually was actually had knowledge that there were these two parcel discrepancies involved and actually asked for the wrong one from the city.
Okay.
But in reality, you're correct, that there is no, the taxes were paid on this in the proper way.
Okay. And normally you have one of these sales because the municipal authority wants to recover its taxes, right?
And yes, Your
Honor. And here you had this sale, although the municipal authority already had the taxes, they just didn't know it, right? I mean, basically, isn't that correct?
They had it for the incorrect tax parcel number. That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So what happened, as I understand it, is that Sendon got in touch with the taxing authorities and cleared up the mistake so that they said, oh, yes, we applied it to the wrong parcel number. But by then there had already been a sale, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. Actually, what had happened is that it was, and at that point in time, Bill Pepper, the city solicitor, had spoken to representatives of Send Corporation and told them, this is what you need to do to correct this. This is what the redemption process is. In addition to that, Your Honor, they were well aware of the sheriff's sale beforehand. They were aware of it as of March 13th, where the proper notice was sent out to their attorney's office. There also, there were several conversations that took place on the day of the sale between Sendon's attorney and the mortgage foreclosure department in Sendon, who informed the attorney's office that they were handling the situation. In addition, as I stated before, Mr. Pepper had informed Sendon of the requirements of this process. So at any point in time, they took no action to remedy the situation. One of the reasons why we have these statutory requirements is because these things do happen. But
doesn't the city have an obligation when it finds out it was completely wrong and it sold somebody's property by mistake to help get it undone?
Well, Your Honor, I think the actions of the city here, the city had taken some action in regard to informing Sendon what they needed to do to remedy the situation. The tax sale had been done, had occurred.
I understand that. I mean, if you look at the precedent that happened, should have, hypothetically, in the future, you have a person who paid all of their taxes on time, and then they're credited to the wrong account. You would think when a municipal subdivision sells your property by mistake, and they find out that they've sold your property by mistake, and it's their mistake, they would be co-counsel with the innocent property owner and say, my gosh, what can we do to make you whole because we sold your property by mistake?
Well, Your Honor, I think what they did was inform, the action of Sendon here was that Sendon did nothing. The city, although made a mistake, made Sendon aware of that mistake, and aware of it as soon as they found out about that mistake.
No, I understand that. The record of the city said, we made a mistake, here's what you can do to fix it, you're on your own, good luck.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I think one of the reasons that we have a strict statutory provision on how these sales occur and how we have challenges for these sales is so a deprived owner can come, but we cannot help people that refuse to take any action at all, which Sendon did. They refused to take any action at all. We, in real property...
But why did Judge Vaughn... Where is the reversible error? I know the standard of review is abuse of discretion. And it's very difficult to find that someone abused their discretion. So tell us, in a couple of sentences, where Judge Vaughn abused his discretion in setting this aside.
The abuse of discretion came at stating this was an excusable mistake. This is not an excusable mistake. Clearly, from the beginning of this process, Sendon was aware of what was going on. Time over time again, throughout the record, they're aware that this is happening, the sheriff's sale is happening. Therefore, they do nothing. They take no action to stop this sale. They take no action to redeem this property. They take no action to petition to set aside the sale. That's why we have petitions to set aside the sale, because mistakes do happen. But we do not reward people that sit on their hands and don't take any action at all, which Sedman did.
Let's assume you're right. Isn't the sole import of that there is no excusable neglect?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Excusable neglect...
If there is no excusable neglect, that still doesn't get you home free, because you have another hurdle to overcome, and that is the holding of the court that there are extraordinary circumstances.
I don't think there's excusable neglect in the fact of this. At the point Sendon knew that there was a problem, and they were informed that on the process on how to remedy that problem, and that they chose to do nothing about that problem, that does not make an excusable mistake. That is a mistake.
Let us assume that you're right. You still need to address the extraordinary circumstances.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why aren't these extraordinary circumstances where it was the city's error that led to the tax sale, and where Sendant's loss is vastly disproportionate to the prejudice that would result to the buyer if this sale were undone?
Your Honor, I do not believe there are extraordinary circumstances in the fact that these mistakes, all the mistakes, took place previously to the process of the sale. Therefore, at the point where Sendon already had the knowledge that the sale was going on, did nothing about it. And let's look at the policy in regarding to this. The reason why we have these statutory provisions, which are all followed throughout this measure, is to protect, one, good faith buyers, and two, innocent owners. But if you have an innocent owner out there, they have to do something. They can't just sit back when they have knowledge that something's going on and do nothing. Then several months later on, all of a sudden, after they've been informed explicitly what to do.
Well, you're still talking about excusable neglect.
Well, Your Honor,
that's an answer to everything?
No, Your Honor, it's not extraordinary circumstances simply because the statute was followed, the procedure took place.
Isn't it pretty extraordinary to have the city decide that your taxes aren't paid when they are paid? Have them misapply the tax payments to the wrong parcel? Wouldn't that be considered extraordinary circumstances?
Well, I guess in itself may be an extraordinary circumstance, but not in this case after the sale starts to proceed.
What Judge Bond discusses in his opinion is that there was communication, and he keeps saying they had notice. And one of the things he points to in his opinion is that after they had these discussions about the taxes, and they thought it was cleared up, Judge Bond says, because they then paid the taxes even though the property had been sold, and that they really didn't paying the taxes if they hadn't thought the problem had been cleared up. So at least in Judge Bond's mind, the record isn't clear that they knew they should be doing one thing, because apparently they thought they solved it another way, evidenced by the fact that they sent in the taxes.
Your Honor, this was a motion for summary judgment, and all the disputed facts should be judged in our favor. It was determined by Judge Bond that William Pepper had informed the city what was going on. It's somehow unfathomable that they didn't know what the process was and just thought everything was okay, after the city solicitor specifically talks to them and says, this is what you have to do. If you don't do it, this is what you have to do to fix the problem. And they simply do not do it. And that's, at that point, the disputed facts there have to go in our favor. It just seems unfathomable that you get a call from the city solicitor telling you what to do, and all of a sudden you think everything's okay. It just doesn't make any sense.
But didn't they also pay the 2001 taxes, which the court noted as being inconsistent with them just kind of throwing up their hands, that they obviously must have misunderstood what was going on, because why would they pay taxes on property they no longer owned or had a security interest in?
Well, Your Honor, that took place after the sheriff's sale which they didn't show up to, they didn't dispute, they didn't set aside. The sheriff's, they had knowledge that the sheriff's sale occurred, took place. That knowledge had to be assumed that they knew this place, this property was sold. And the fact that they paid taxes later, this company seems to be making mistakes all over the place. You know, maybe it was just another mistake that this company made.
Well, I mean, just in about 5 minutes, would you like to reserve that time?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Snyder.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Ben Snyder from Prickett, Jones, and Elliott on behalf of the appellee, Senate Mortgage Services, Inc., in this matter. Your Honor, our overall view of this case is that it involves three basic elements. The first is that this case involves the discretionary judgment of the Superior Court, which should be accorded due deference. The second is that this case involves very extraordinary, unusual circumstances, such that any precedential value of this case should be and will be limited. And third, that this case was ultimately decided in a way that was fair and equitable to everyone involved. Now, with regard to Mr. Szczepanski's first argument that the Superior Court failed to properly apply the summary judgment standard, it is simply erroneous. The Superior Court identified the factual issues and resolved the factual issues in favor of Mr. Szczepanski, but ultimately still decided the case in favor of Sendit. Thus, to the extent they have identified factual issues, those issues have actually turned out to be immaterial and therefore shouldn't have been a bar to summary judgment being granted by the court below. The next argument advanced by Mr. Szczepanski is that the court abused its discretion in granting relief under Rule 60B. Now, without citation to any authority, Mr. Szczepanski argues that relief is barred because, one, Sendit had knowledge of the tax sale prior to the sale occurring, and two, that the city followed the requisite statutory notice requirements. Of course, the court below is directed in exercising its discretion under Rule 60B instead to examine the unique circumstances of each case and instead avoid arbitrary and narrow limitations. I think the consequence, of course, of Mr. Szczepanski's argument, if it were to be accepted, would be that you could never find excusable neglect solely because a movement had a notice of a tax sale. And we respectfully submit that that would be contrary to the purposes and meaning of Rule 60B. Now, more critically, Mr. Szczepanski argues that the Superior Court abused its discretion in finding excusable neglect under Rule 60B1. Now, under Rule 60B1, a movement must show that its neglect was not simple carelessness or sheer indifference to the underlying proceeding. And in this regard, the Superior Court found that Sendit was indeed negligent. However, the Superior Court found that this neglect, under all the circumstances of the case and within its discretion, was excusable. The Superior Court reasoned that Sendit's neglect in failing to object at confirmation and otherwise completing a redemption of the property could not have been the product of simple carelessness or sheer indifference because Sendit ended up paying the amount, de minimis balance of unpaid taxes due in April 2001 during the redemption period, which evidenced that Sendit was trying to rectify the problem, and that Sendit paid the following year's tax bill in July of 2001, which evidenced that Sendit, albeit mistakenly, had believed that the problem had been resolved. And in addition, in June of 2001, Sendit sought and obtained a default judgment in the foreclosure proceeding on the property as well. Thus, there was ample evidence to make it clear that Sendit's conduct was not simple carelessness or sheer indifference to the proceeding. Nevertheless, even if this court were to find, or the court below were to find, that Sendit's conduct was inexcusable under the circumstances, relief was still available under Rule 60B6. For extraordinary circumstances. And it is, in fact, quite extraordinary, I would submit, for a taxpayer's property to be sold for non-payment of taxes when that taxpayer reasonably attempted to pay all taxes due and, in fact, paid the equivalent value of the taxes owed. In fact, the city admits that if it had known all the surrounding circumstances before the sale, it would not have proceeded with the sale. But perhaps most egregiously and most incredibly in this case is that when the sale eventually took place, the property was sold for less than 1.5% of the fair market value of the property. Thus, relief was properly granted under Rule 6B6 by the Superior Court below. Now finally, having vacated the confirmation of the tax sale, the Superior Court also properly exercised its discretion in setting the tax sale aside. Again, this is a determination left to the discretion of the trial court. And the standard is whether there was fraud, mistake, accident, impropriety, misconduct, surprise, or irregularity in the sales process that will support invalidation of the sale. And again, in this case, there were numerous irregularities that, when coupled with a grossly inadequate sales price, easily justify setting aside this share of sale. And in fact, I don't think I'm overstating my case when I say that a superior court that was advised of all the surrounding circumstances would never have confirmed this tax sale, if for no other reasons than the same reasons that the city wouldn't have conducted the tax sale in the first place. Thus, the Superior Court also properly exercised its discretion in setting aside the sale. Now, finally, Mr. Sizapansky raises some public policy concerns in suggesting that in affirming this court's decision, it might cause additional risk and uncertainty at tax sales such that there will be less bidders and property sold at tax sales will receive less money. In this regard, it's critical to remember that the court's decision below required Senate to fully compensate and make whole Mr. Sizapansky for any losses. Thus, there will be no greater financial risk for bidders at tax sales than currently exists. And this also brings me back to where I started, and that was this case is an extraordinary case. And it has very unusual circumstances, and any precedential value would be quite limited. The most critical of those facts that Senate reasonably attempted to pay its taxes in full. It paid the total amount of taxes during the redemption period. It paid the next year's taxes. And moreover, the city has since fixed the discrepancy from which this controversy began. They have conformed their city tax parcel numbers to the county's tax parcel numbers. And also, again, the city admitted in the deposition testimony of Cheryl Russell from the tax assessor's office that if she had known all the surrounding circumstances, she would have not conducted the sale. In addition, when the property was sold, it was again sold for a grossly inadequate sales price. Thus, the relative equities of the party stands that Senate stands to lose approximately $216,000, while Mr. Sizapansky stands to gain the difference in the fair market value of the property, which we've agreed is at least $160,000. In 1997, when the property was sold, it was appraised at $199,000. But for purposes of avoiding dispute, we're assuming it's $160,000. Between that and his token bid of $2,450, and all of this because Senate failed to pay a $357 premium to effect the redemption of the property. Now, ultimately, Mr. Sizapansky has not suffered irreparable harm. Thus, by affirming this Superior Court's decision, everyone will be fairly compensated. No one will have suffered an undue loss, and we respectfully submit that such a result can hardly be said to constitute an abuse of discretion. Accordingly, we respectfully ask that the court affirm the decision of the court below, and that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Colton, you have about 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. All the circumstances described by counsel could have been corrected rather easily by Senate Mortgage. They chose to do nothing. The point in time when time after notice after notice after notice goes to them that this is going to happen and they refuse to do something, we don't reward people, especially in when it comes to the uniqueness of real property who sit on their hands and don't do anything. The point in time we go through we have a statute for the procedure of a sheriff's sale that protects both innocent buyers, good faith buyers, and innocent owners. And Senate should not be rewarded for not taking any action over this period of time. In fact, Senate, even when they became aware of the action, waited over a month till they filed anything. My client, Mr. Sizapansky, who's had the property for 3.5 years, taken, divested from him. So the fact that he's getting taken from real property is a circumstance that should be considered. At the point that this sentence doesn't do anything, it ceases being extraordinary circumstances because they've been put on notice of the procedure, of the process, of what they need to do, and they simply refuse to do it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Bert. The court will take this matter under advisement and also take a brief recess.
Please rise.